The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Welcome to the First Cup Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your CJ Cup recap episode. Joining me to break it all down, Greg Ducharme is here. What is up, Greg?
All good stuff. What a weekend. It's been a lot of fun. So happy to have you guys back on here with me.
It's going to be hot fire because Kyle Porter is here with, I'm sure, some spicy takes. What up, KP?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm in a new state this week. Ooh. Where is Kyle?
Where are you?
I'm in Oklahoma. I'm at my parents' house. The chagrin of many, I'm not in my parents' basement. this will be my fifth bed to have slept in the last 10 days. We're inching closer to the house completion. But here we are from Oklahoma. I got some takes.
Life on the road.
We're rooting for you. Yeah, you are a regular traveling pro. Thanks for joining us. Gentlemen, CJ Cup won by none other than Jason Kokrak in his 233rd career start on the PGA Tour. Greg, we'll start with you because you mentioned this off the top before we went hot. I mean, this round of golf that he played on Sunday, an 8-under 64, not a single bogey on the card, steps up on 18 with a one-shot lead, absolutely pipes one down the middle. Like, seems like he's been here before, even though he hasn't.
Yeah, he was calm. You get the sense when I watch a player hit a tee shot like that in that moment, like that driver's his favorite club and likely has been for a while. I think that's the thing with Dustin Johnson. Like, he's always said, when DJ's in nervous moments, he said this about Ryder Cups before. I'm happy that first tee shot was a driver because I don't know if I could have gotten anything else on it. And it's also his favorite club. And then for Kokrak, you just get the sense that he loves hitting driver. And that's why he's able to step up and hit that tee shot because it was so good. But so was everything else this day. This round was ridiculous. He was third in strokes gained tee to green, right? I mean, go down the list here. He hit 17 of 18 greens in regulation. He's second in proximity on the day. And then he leads in strokes gained putting. So he just he made it easy on himself, but also sealed the deal. He made it hard on Xander. Xander gave him a really good push in the middle of that round, and he just kept on running. So it was really cool to see a really impressive Sunday out of him.
I think the big thing that, I don't know if they talked about this, I don't always watch with the sound on, KP, but the this was a Kokrak Xander group that, first of all, they went toe-to-toe with one another all Sunday long. But Jason Day was in this group, and he withdrew on, like, I think after hitting his first shot on the second hole. So now you've got a group that is going toe-to-toe at Shadow Creek, where pace of play is already really slow. You're now a twosome playing in a bunch of threesomes. Like, I don't know. I feel like this could have been a lot more difficult mentally than your average Sunday trying to capture your first PGA Tour victory in your 233rd career start.
Especially with playing with Xander. I mean, Xander's got this sort of we'll talk about him in a minute, but this reputation of just closing so hard on Sundays, and you kind of see him coming. I was really impressed with, I mean, Kokrak obviously made a bunch of putts on holes one through, what was that, 11, basically. Mm-hmm. He played the first 11 in 7-under, I think he was.
Yep.
And then he birdies 18. But I kind of felt like the way he closed it out was he had some really smart shots. And you don't always see that from guys that are trying to close out their first. He's such a weird, like, case study, though, right? Because I think if you would have asked me – last week, like, hey, how many wins does Jason Kokrak have on the PGA Tour? I would have been like, I don't know, like one, maybe two or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he's got none. And yet, if you look at his FedEx Cup finishes, so he's 14th last year, 52nd, 77, 33, 100, 73, 62. So he's like this weird middle ground of being like really good on the PGA Tour, but never having won. I don't know if there's anybody else really like that on the tour that's not super young. I mean, do you guys have another comp for that?
Well, I don't know if I have another comp, but I think that it makes sense when you look at his statistical breakdown, right? He's one of these players that year after year, and this goes to everything that you and Kyle, you and Rick say, and it goes to what Mark says as well about the importance of putting. It really matches both. He consistently is in the mix, and he's around. He's a high finisher in the FedEx Cup without winning because of his ability off the tee, right? He's ninth in 2020, 11th in 2019, keep going back, 30th in 2018, 12th in 2017. He's consistently 11th in 16. He's consistently a top driver of the golf ball. His iron play is pretty good too, pretty spot on. But yet you look at 2016 putting, 154th. 175th in 18, 110th, I'm sorry, 110th in 18, 103rd in 19. He's never been inside the top 100. Last year, 151st. This year, well, 24th. But that has a lot to do. I mean, you end up with a win like this, and you lead the field in strokes gained putting, and that's what it takes sometimes to cross you over that ledge, especially in a field like this. So in some cases, it's surprising. It's not surprising at all that he's had the finishes in the FedEx Cup that we've seen. It's surprising that he hasn't had a putting performance like this yet. This is the first one. Because, I mean, you look at that stroke, it's really good. You would expect that to pop up, but it just shows how hard it is to do.
Real quick, I think that's a great point, because I think that sometimes we sometimes do this thing when we talk about like DJ and Rory and some of these guys that are unbelievable ball strikers that Kokrak is kind of close to, as if DJ and Rory are like not very good putters when they actually are pretty good putters. And Kokrak is actually a really bad putter. Like he's like not good at all. And yet we sort of, I don't know, kind of lump all the bad putting quote unquote together. And I think we kind of talk about it incorrectly. So I'm glad you brought that up. I think that's a really meaningful point. He's kind of like the, I don't know, American Ben On or something.
You know, he doesn't get into that group.
recent players to earn their first PGA Tour win in limited field events. Here are the four most recent. Justin Thomas did it at the 2015 CIMB, which is, that's this tournament now, right? CIMB, or does that still exist?
I'll check. Give you a little fact check here.
That's different. That was in, I think that was in Malaysia.
Yeah, you're right.
Yes, that was in, that's Malaysia. Right.
Lowry, 2015 WGC Bridgestone. Knox, 2015 WGC HSBC. Danny Willett, 2016 Masters. I guess that's considered a limited field event. I mean, okay, so where do these events rank, right? I mean, CJ Cup, relatively new. Zozo, which we're going to get next week, very new as well. It's a stacked field, Greg. You've got a lot of big names here, but it's 78. You get some of the exemptions from, you know, the Korean Tour or the Chinese Tour or the Japanese Tour if we have, if we were going to play the WGC HSBC for the China guys. Like, where would you rank this caliber of victory for Jason Kokrak?
So this one's interesting for a couple reasons. Typically an event like the CJ Cup, an event like the Zozo, these are really good fields. Yet the time of the year that they are in the schedule, they're almost standalone events. The FedEx Cup is, while it's as important as it is for the FedEx Cup, it's so far down the line. It's important for player of the year, but it's so far down the line. You have time to make it up. Nothing's cemented. And you're going to have a holiday break in the meantime. So it's like you're getting a head start. It's like free points, free money. And it's not free. It's earned. But it's, you're just taking it while you can. It's a bonus. It's like a bonus. But now this year, there's something in November that we are playing for. We're measuring players, games, and abilities, and everybody is trying to prepare for this event in Georgia in November, and it elevates the pressure in this event even more. Not that it's going to affect your ability to get in, but everybody playing, Xander who's playing, I mean, these guys are now in mid-season form. They're in major championship season form, and they're trying to get ready to go put on a green jacket. And so it this year has a little bit of a elevated pressure, elevated meaning for this event this week and next week as well. So I look at it as a really important event. I don't know if it's as big as a WGC. It's certainly not as big as Danny Willett's Masters, but I think it's clearly ahead of Justin Thomas's win at CIMB. JT's just so young at that time.
So I've got a fact check here on the CIMB Classic. So Mark Leishman was the last winner in that 2018-2019 season. Then it was replaced by the Zozo. So not different tournament history, all that good stuff. CIMB lost its event, and that sponsor doesn't sponsor anything else. Xander, Schauffele, Kyle. Hell of a Sunday. Goes out, shoots a 66, 6 under par, finishes 2 back of Jason Kokrak. I think that many will try to frame this as a disappointment, considering he was the 36-hole leader. He was 2 over on Sunday. But this is just another week that Xander puts himself in contention week in, week out. Probably one of the most underrated players on tour at the moment. But I think a lot of, you know, when we start reading stuff tomorrow, it might be framed as a disappointment.
Yeah, I think there's a couple different ways to look at it, and I don't know that they are, I don't know that they clash. I think they can both kind of coexist. And one is that, I mean, he's the best player in the world over the last 4 months, 3 months. If you look at, if you only go off strokes gain,
yeah,
he's the best player in the world. And I don't know that very many people would be able to kind of identify that or call it out. They would say DJ, they would say Bryson, whatever, but it's really been Xander. And, you know, I think his cross category ability is underrated. He's very JT-ish in that he's good at everything. Yeah. But man, it feels like he gets allergic to these leads sometimes. Like the 36 hole lead, 74 on Saturday. I get it if you're around par and it's like, okay, I didn't have my stuff, but 74, that's bad. And then even on Sunday today, when he touches the lead, all of a sudden he's 1 over the last 5, and you're just like, I don't know. It just left me feeling a little bit, I don't know, just empty about kind of where he was at a couple different times during the week.
To frame that in terms of results, Greg, Xander's last victory, his 4th on the PGA Tour, was the 2019 Century Tournament of Champions. He's finished runner-up 6 times since then. That's, I don't know if that's variance. I don't know if it is, to Kyle's point. He might get a little tight when he touches the lead, but we're starting to get to the point where you have six runners up since your last victory that there might be something there.
Well, it speaks to a couple things. One, he's so consistent, and it's my favorite aspect of him. And I also wonder if it's something. Rick, I want to get your thoughts on this. I wonder if it's something that hurts him in a way. Like Kyle, you bring up JT. I think there's some differences between JT and Xander, where Xander is really good at everything across the board. Last year was top 37 in all the major statistical categories. JT to me is a little weaker in the putting, and his driving accuracy is a little weaker, yet his iron play is the best in the game, right? His wedge play is amongst the best in the game. So he is the very best at something, and Xander's not the very best at anything, but he's inside the top 40 in everything. And I wonder if what is Xander Schauffele in his own mind, in his private thoughts, what does he lean on in his game when push comes to shove? If you're Justin Thomas, you say, okay, give me a short iron, give me a wedge, right? Let's get a ball in play here, and I'm going to win this tournament with my iron play. If you're Bryson DeChambeau, you're going to say, I'm going to make this course so easy with my distance. This is my advantage. This is what I lean on. Tiger had a lot of things he could lean on. He was the very best at everything. So that's very rare. nobody really has that ability, but most players who win at very high levels have something that is they're the very, very, very best at. And I wonder if Xander isn't, what does he have to lean on? What do you guys think about that?
That's really interesting. And to defend my point, they're both positive strokes gained in every category over the last 6 months. But what you're saying is true. Do you think, how about this? Do you think Xander or JT is a better driver of the ball?
I give Xander an edge. I think that while Xander may miss fairways, hitting the ball in the fairway or in the rough is irrelevant these days, but accuracy is still important. And I look at Justin Thomas as a guy who hits it into the trees sometimes. Like the tournament he won in Memphis, he hit it across the little cart path bridge on 15, right? Like he can, and then he hit it way, way right on 18, which I know is a smart shot, but he can do that sometimes where it's a little more. Xander, I don't perceive that anyway. And I don't know if there's any numbers to back that up, but I feel like he's a little more accurate.
No, so over the last 12 months, Xander is 0.74 strokes gained off the tee and JT is 0.5. So it's not an insignificant. I mean, it's a good sized, and that's a great call out because I think I think if you ask most casual fans who's a better driver, they probably say JT. I probably would have said JT just off the top of my head. So I think that's interesting. I want to hear what Rick has to say about like what's Xander's kind of go to down the stretch.
Yeah, I like the way he puts it under pressure, right? I think he has that really nice like left hand low stroke. But I think the problem, and this is a larger problem on the PGA Tour, is if you're relying on the putter, there's so many other things that have to go right to give you an opportunity to use that strength. It's like when Tiger can't hit a fairway, he doesn't get to take advantage of his irons. It's like when you have a really great quarterback in the NFL, but your wide receivers can't get separation. Like you never get to use that strength that you have. And I think that unfortunately, sometimes he doesn't give himself enough opportunities to roll those putts in. But I do agree. I think like the visual stuff, and I don't have the numbers back this up. When Xander's a little off with the driver, he keeps it in play. When JT's really off with the driver, it's three fairways over and he's trying to figure something out from there.
Right.
The second round of the US Open for JT, like at Wingfoot, it was a circus. And he got it to the house somehow. But it is a good point because it feels out of control when JT's off.
Yeah.
Right. But he still could, he knows how to score. It's just, you know, it's something that could put you in a little trouble down the stretch.
Yeah.
Xander is 14-1 for that little tournament in November in Augusta, Georgia, if you think his game translates there.
Well, I had something last week on CBSSports.com about like five guys that you should bet right now because you're going to have shorter odds come the Masters, and he was one of them. I thought this 2 week stretch he was going to play really well. I think last week he was like 18-1 to win the Masters.
Yeah, that's probably right.
I also had Matthew Wolf on there, so ignore that one. But I think he's a guy that if you were kind of getting in on him, you probably even now, I think he could end up at 12 for Augusta. I think that's probably the shortest that he'll get to. But I don't know. I think that's interesting. I think he finished T2 last year.
He's phenomenal. He's phenomenal. Yeah. I can't wait to see it. Speaking of phenomenal, Tyrrell Hatton shakes off the jet lag, Greg, which I was shocked. I mean, and he even told us, I think it was Friday or Saturday. He's like, I'm exhausted. Like this is, I don't know what's in the tank. He follows up his 73 on Saturday with a 65 on Sunday, a round of 7 under. He finishes 3 shots back of Jason Kokrak. And I don't know what to say. I mean, the great run of success for Tyrrell Hatton, it just keeps chugging along.
He's a really, really good ball striker, right? I mean, I was talking to Doug Bell on Thursday, and he was like, we don't consider him to be an elite ball striker. And it's something we talk about here. We talk about Hatton a lot on this show. But I don't know if we put him in a class of like a – if we were doing this a couple of years ago, Justin Rose or, you know, Rory McIlroy, some of these great ball strikers on the – Henrik Stenson, these great European Ryder Cup ball strikers, we would consider – I wouldn't have considered Hatton one of them last year. I wouldn't have considered him one of the great ball strikers. Yet here he is this week, second tee to green, first what he's first approaching the green. That's what I thought. And he putts the lights out of it. He was 14th in putting so far for the week. So, I mean, he made 324 feet of putts for the week. It was really, really impressive. And his game's really well-rounded as well. But I'm surprised at how much I kind of write off his ball striking ability. I don't think that I give him the credit tee to green that he really deserves.
What do you think about when you think about him? Short game?
I think of him kind of all almost in like a Xander essence. Gets it in putting, I guess. I think he makes a lot of putts. I think a short game. I don't know. I feel like he's hot. I feel like it's going to fade away. I don't feel like it's something that's sustainable. Like, Hatton had a great week. He's a tour. Yeah, he's good. But he's much more consistent tee to green than I give him credit for.
So that's what's interesting. So, Kyle, I want to get your thoughts on this because he is the streakiest, most consistent player around, right? Like, when you look at his results and you see he's won three times in 13 starts, he's contended a bunch. He finished third here. But, like, when you watch him play, it's all over the place. I mean, he made five birdies on Sunday on his back nine. He had nine birdies in total. I feel like just watching him, he makes a ton of birdies. He makes a ton of bogeys. It makes him look much more volatile than he actually is, if that makes sense. Like, he's consistently erratic, and the scorecard's always like a psychopath, but it gets the job done week in and week out. It's weird.
It is weird. I love Hatton. I think he's awesome. I'm always interested when he's playing. I'm always interested when he's near the lead. He's just crazy enough to that you're in on whatever he's doing, you know? And, you know, you talk about the most underrated guys in the world. He's got to be up there over the last year or so. I'm really interested though, because I'm with Greg a little bit of okay, is this him kind of coming into his own, and this is the level that he's going to exist at over the next 5 or 6 years? Or is this kind of a one-off, he's popping up and this is the highest he'll ever be ranked in the OWGR inside whatever he's at, 10th right now, or maybe 9th by the time this comes out on Monday. I don't know. I don't know how that's going to go. Do we know anything? What was his amateur career? I don't have a ton on his pedigree type stuff, but yeah, I think you're right. He's consistently not inconsistent, but he's consistently crazy. He's consistently all over the place. And yet the results are what you want them to be.
Top 25s and wins. 9 of 11 last year, 9 of 11 events he played in on the PGA Tour were top 25s. That is with a win. That's a lot. And so far this year, well, it's been, I guess, decided he missed the cut at the US Open, but he did what he did this week and last week.
So, okay, real quick, to Rick's point, this number backs it up. He was fourth on the tour last year in birdie percentage. So to be fourth in birdie percentage, and we don't, you know, he was good, but he wasn't the other four guys in the top five are Webb, JT, DJ, and Bryson. Yeah, so those are guys that are winning two or three times a year, and he's not winning two or three times a year. I mean, at least on the PGA Tour, he is globally. So I think that speaks to your point, Rick.
I am interested to see if this is have we reached ceiling Hatton at 9 or 10 in the world? But I don't think this is a blip. I mean, the last 4 years, his official world golf ranking, 2016, he finished 24th. 2017, he's finished 16th. 2018, he finished 23rd. And 2019, he was 32nd. 2020 will be presumably much better than that. So you're talking about 5 straight years where he's been a top 30 player in the world.
So I don't know if you guys have heard this stat, but I think it's something like the general turnover in the top 10 in official world golf rankings is 20%. So in a typical year, two guys in, two guys out is a typical kind of a thing. And to me, if you're 8, 9, 10 in the world consistently, that's a really good peak. And if he could stay there for a couple of years, his viewpoint would change. I don't think Hatton has to raise his world golf ranking number to gain respect. He just has to keep it around where it is and play a little bit more in the US. And I think he'll gain the respect that he needs, but can he can he keep it, I guess, is the question. Because if you fall to 25th in the world, you're a great player, but you're not recognized nearly in the same light.
His Wikipedia page says, for amateur career, Hatton qualified for 2010 Open Championship as an amateur. That's his entire amateur career. That's it. That's
all illustrious.
So we might have to dig a little deeper than Wikipedia on that one.
I love it. 33-1 to win the Masters in November, which is kind of an interesting little number.
Do you like that, Rick? Do you like the Masters number?
In a vacuum, yes, but I just know that probably a couple weeks ago it was probably like 50. So like it hurts me. Like I think in a vacuum he wins it more often than what, like 3% of the time or whatever he'd have to win it to make that number come true. But I just know it was much better 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah,
but I think it's
Rick. I mean, what does the spreadsheet say? How
I'd have to run the numbers on that one. Three of his last 13, or three of his.
Look, there's only one good bet according to the spreadsheet. It's Webb Simpson. So that's I mean,
I think Webb is looking for a second green jacket.
Forgot about that. Big storyline coming into the week: Brooks Koepka dealing with the knee injury and then the hip and everything else that's going on, finishes T28, Greg, which I don't know what our expectations were. He obviously said expectations were winning. He's always going to say that. I think that if you just get through this four rounds uninjured and feeling good, that's probably a win.
Yeah. Well, uninjured is the key, but at what point do we know that he's uninjured? And that's what I struggle with. You can't, and I'm not saying that he's intentionally misleading us, because I do believe that there's a chance that he realizes now he was more hurt than he was. I think that's a real possibility, but I can't believe when he says now at this point, I'm healthy. I'm 100%. I can't believe it. I need to see a significant time period where it's not an issue. It's consistently healthy, and the play kind of needs to improve to back it up. Otherwise, I'm always going to be wondering. So I really look, 5 under par. He shoots for the week. There's some good. There's definitely some good. It's a rep to take the rust off a little bit. And you look at this, and it's hard for me to say one way or another this is good or bad, or I guess indifferent is where I stand, because I don't know the state of his health. And it looks good, but I need more time to see if that's really the case.
We'll never know, Kyle, right? I mean, we're just going to have to see what the next 3, 6, 9 months looks like for him.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. Like, I don't – so did you see what he said on Thursday after round one?
What'd he say?
He said, he's like, yeah, I'm kind of just treating this as like a warm up for Augusta, which is like, I get it, but it's also like, you're playing for like $9.75 million this week. Like, and you haven't played in 2 months. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's just the stuff, the way he says stuff just kind of annoys me. And I think that leads to my, I don't know if it's frustration, but with the injury stuff, I'm just kind of like, whatever. Like, if you're at an event, I'll cover it. And if not, then you're not. I don't know. I don't have much more than that, I guess.
I want to talk Zozo, which we've got a Tiger sighting next week. We've got to talk Tiger and Phil. It's 2020. We've got to talk Tiger and Phil after break. We've got to do odds and ends. But Greg, we'll do this. We'll wrap with this before we go to break. Jason Kokrak, $1.75 million in the bank account. What would your night in Las Vegas look like with $1.7 million in your account?
I might be at the airport. That is a dangerous, that's a dangerous combination. I know that's going to really hurt Jacob. That's really who we should be asking here. That's going to hurt him to say that I'd be trying to get out of there as soon as possible. But yeah.
Do you guys know, can you guess Jason Kokrak career earnings? Not including today.
$9 million?
I was going to say 10.
13.1.
Wow. Okay.
He's played in like 15 majors and won 13 million, and he's never won a PGA Tour event. That's crazy.
Producer Jacob would have donated half of that back to a casino before he left town.
Probably MGM.
William Hill.
William Hill. Sorry,
William Hill. Come on, guys.
Come on. William Hill. Exactly. Would have.
Isn't that what I said?
Yeah, that. There would be a bunch of blog posts about how there's a $300,000 Masters ticket on Hideki or something.
Rory Sabatini.
Rory Sabatini. Yeah. All right. That's my cue. We're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Did you know more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Spoiler alert, your feet don't have to hurt, and I know foot biomechanics can be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. It's a signature orthotic shape of the super feet insoles that give you the comfort and support where you need it the most. It redistributes and reduces stress and strain on your entire body. Think about those long walks on a golf course and how uncomfortable your feet can get. Well, they don't have to, and Superfeet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. It is one of the most important parts of your overall health and well-being. And for a limited time, Superfeet is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeet.com to save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. Hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
And we're back. Zozo Championship. Now just a few days away, Tiger Woods, of course, is going to be the storyline. Gentlemen, KP, we went through this last week. Tiger Woods did, in fact, need a sponsor's exemption to get in this week because these are the two hardest events to get into in the entire world. But we'll play the expectations game with Tiger. Last time we saw him, he was, missing the cut at the U.S. Open, hasn't finished inside the top 50 in a while. I mean, what are we expecting? He's won here five times at Sherwood. What do we think?
Yeah, it's I don't know. I think my expectations have shifted a little bit for him since the 19 Masters win. You know, even going into that, when you looked at his five events leading into the 19 Masters, you're like, he's striking the ball really well. And he's not right now. Like, he hasn't at all in 2020. He's just The tee to green stuff is not sharp. And so I don't know how you – I get he's Tiger, all this stuff. But I just don't know how you can go in thinking, he can be, really competitive with Xander Schauffele right now. I don't know how that is, a reality. Now, maybe he's worked some things out since the U.S. Open. I think this is going to be telling for the Masters. You know, I think – I said this before. His game doesn't have to be – I mean, it wasn't lights out at the 2019 Masters, which he won. It was good. It was solid. It was good. But it wasn't like he played the best event of his life. It doesn't have to be amazing, but it's got to be sharper than it has been. And I think that's kind of the thing I'm looking for is the tee to green. Like, how sharp are you, and is it better than what we've seen so far in 2020?
How about this? Just saw our buddy Eric Patterson at EPAT Golf tweet this. Tiger is going to defend in two consecutive starts. So he's going to defend Zozo, and he's going to defend at Augusta, which is phenomenal stuff. But Greg, it certainly feels like we are very far removed from that version of Tiger, even though it was, just a year ago. But the entire calendar year of 2020 has not been kind to one Mr. Woods.
I spoke to some people who were at the 2019 Masters, and they were talking about,
was it me?
No. I think you were playing, but it was, no, it was Michael Breed was there covering it, and he was on the range, doing some coverage on the range. And he said, he looked at Tiger and it was like completely different. Just watching him before the tournament, walking around, there was a completely different, stride. He looked like he knew that he was going to win. And when he got to the range and started hitting balls, he wasn't working on anything. He was just hitting balls. There was no practice sessions. There was no rehearsals with the club of getting the club into a different position. It was like he knew he was just practicing the shots he was going to have to play, and he was in a trance all week. And we haven't seen that since. And so, Kyle, to your point earlier, if he was striking the ball really well heading in, he was in command of his golf ball. And he got into the heat of the moment, and he knew kind of how to pace himself and get the job done. And I don't see anything of the sorts. Since the President's Cup last year, I haven't seen anything anywhere close to that feeling, which it was Zozo and then President's Cup. He was in control of his ball. And so now looking ahead to this week and looking ahead to Masters, at least for this week, if your prediction is that he's going to play great, it's based on either course history or it's just you're a fan and you're guessing, because there's been no evidence to say that he's going to play really well this week. Sherwood's a tough course and it's not very forgiving. So I have some real concerns with him this week. And I'm happy to be proven wrong, as Tiger's proven many of us wrong many, many times. I'm happy to be proven wrong, but I'm not expecting a great showing from him.
Great, great call on President's Cup. He was awesome in that event. Awesome.
Yeah. And that's what, best player, right?
Well, and that's why coming into 2020, you're like, oh, okay. Like that's a real thing. And then it hadn't panned out.
So think about this. So he went, okay. So he wins Zozo. He finishes, then it was President's Cup and he played great. He finished fourth at the Hero World Challenge, which is only 18 players. Then he got to Torrey. And remember on Sunday on number two where his ball went halfway down and no, it went all the way down and bounced up. Yeah. Like, could you imagine if that goes down, he gets the momentum. Like he finished ninth there, but he could have gone on a run of win President's Cup, fourth, and like another top three. And I remember how excited I was. That feels like a million years ago.
That's the 2020 version of the ball hitting the stick on 15 at Augusta.
Oh my God.
Oh
yeah.
That was the 2013 Masters that Adam Scott went on to win. And it wasn't like the weird thing. I don't know why we're talking about the 2013 Masters. The weird thing about that year's Masters was it wasn't really played that great until, I mean, the last like five holes were awesome because it was Scott and Cabrera and it was kind of crazy, right? But it wasn't like a lights out runaway, like nobody was beating this guy thing. So yeah, that's, I don't know that I wonder how much stuff like that, like the butterfly effect plays into it.
That'll keep me up tonight. Thank you very much. Phil Mickelson has won again. It's not on the PGA Tour. It is on the Champions Tour. He's now 2-for-2. He's undefeated as he closed out the Dominion Charity Classic. And Greg, before we got started, you were like, how's this going to impact his world ranking? And then, and then we broke the news that they don't get any points for this, and you are appalled. You were appalled. That Phil
I'm surprised. Look, I mean, these are some ranking of the best. I know that they're like the World Golf Rankings covers so many different events, right? It covers professional golf across the whole world, like tours of various levels. You would be surprised if you looked at the site of what kind of tour events you could play in and get world golf ranking points. You would be surprised. And you have Phil Mickelson and beating Mike Weir down the stretch by three. He's getting nothing for it. He's getting nothing. I mean, you could have, they do have events where only the winner gets world golf ranking points and you end up getting like 5 points or whatever. They have different ways to break this down. I'm just a little surprised that the winner on PGA Tour Champions doesn't get a, you know, couple, a little something for the effort.
To Greg's point, KP, I'll tee you up on this. To Greg's point, producer Jacob is putting in other tours into the outline right now that do get official world golf rankings. And he typed in Big Easy Tour, Alps Golf Tour, Abima TV Tour. I don't know if he's even trolling me or not on if he's typing these in. But like these get points and the Champions Tour doesn't.
All Thailand. The Big Easy Tour gets points, but the tour of the Big Easy is on does not get points.
Yeah, right.
I love Greg's take on this. I think it's correct. But also, isn't the PGA Tour of Champions like this weird, like you can't, it's like really hard to play your way on. I wonder if that, it seems to be like this weird, like invitation only type thing. Sort of like, although you get world ranking points for the Hero World Challenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I'm just saying they should get something.
We made fun of Greg before we went hot, and now I'm like kind of convinced he's right.
Now you're thinking about it. Now you're on my side.
Real quick, I mean, KP, put a bow on Phil Mickelson for us. Is he just going to start playing more Champions Tour events? I mean, I know he loves a cool like $500,000 every time he tees it up. If this is going to be the level of success that he has, and obviously nowhere near that level of success that he's had on the PGA Tour recently, like where does he fit right now?
It is weird because, like, do you think Tiger will do this?
No.
I don't either. I think Phil's just, like, addicted to golf.
Yeah.
Like, I think
Phil's in much better shape to play more golf. He probably at this point of his career enjoys it more. Not to say that Tiger doesn't. I think Tiger's playing legacy golf. He's chasing 18. That's what he's doing. Like if Tiger had 19 major championships, you might see him once a year at Augusta.
Yeah.
See, I think players prepare for events differently. And Tiger is always prepared for events by practicing, right? Tiger will disappear to prepare for an event and maybe play one or two to get ready. But he's always, it seems like at least he feels like he can prepare without going to a tournament, where Phil plays in tournaments to prepare. And I think Phil's playing this week. I think he played in the Ozarks because he wasn't in the PGA Tour event. And he has a certain number of reps, tournament reps he wants to get before he plays in a major. So I think you may see him play PGA Tour champion events when there's a WGC match play, if he's not in that, right? If he's outside the top 64 in the world and he's not in that, he may play on PGA Tour champions or something like that, where he has something he's getting ready for, but he's not able to play the PGA Tour at that time.
And some people prepare for majors by hitting drivers in their living room. So,
yeah,
you know,
by the thousands,
whatever works for you. Odds and ends, gentlemen, we actually had a pretty great bounce back week. Unfortunately, we fell short of a really, really great bounce back week because Kyle, you had Xander as your pick to win. Unfortunately, you don't get anything for second, but we give you a tidy golf clap for being close. You get the horseshoes, right? Like almost.
Yeah, he was also my one and done, so I actually do get something for it, but...
We'll get to that in a second. That's in the next segment.
Sorry, I'm just running over your job, right?
That's okay. Greg, shout out to you. I believe Russell Henley was your sleeper, and my best bet as a top 10 lock, which paid out at 6-1. So Russell Henley, though he faded on Sunday, lined our pockets a little bit.
Yeah. And he was a big play for us both in DFS, as 7,100. So great play if you followed along on Monday.
We will be back at it again on Monday for the Zozo, that DFS preview, obviously coming matchups. We all did pretty well. So Greg, you and I actually, sorry, scratch that. We all went 4-2, Rick, Greg, Kyle, Mark did not. Mark was 2-4, I believe, which is probably his first losing week in quite some time. But we had a tiebreaker, which is what we do via the odds. And you and I, Greg, are going to get half of the matchup belt each because we beat Kyle by $11.
Yes, cha-ching.
Cha-ching. It's like I'm not enjoying this win at all. But
yeah, I know. But we had the same picks. I find that quite interesting.
I do find it quite interesting, considering I submitted mine live on the show, and you texted yours in later. So I also find it interesting that
Jacob sent me a message. He sent me a text message. I have the proof of this. We could take screenshots all you want. He sends me a list, all the matchups. I reply with the winners almost immediately. And also, this is another point brought up. I'm not sure why. If I was going to copy somebody's picks, I think I would have gone 2-4. Believe it at
that. That's very true. That's how I know you were very honest and just made your own picks, because you would not have tailed me. All right, one and done time. So, KP, this is where you get to shine. You and I both at Xander, we earned $1,053,000, which moves you, Mr. Porter, to the top of the one and done standings, with me nipping at your heels just $15,000 behind.
Yeah, I'm kind of like Phil at, you know what, remember when he would like start out the year on the West Coast and just be lights out, and you're like, oh, it's gonna be a big year for Phil, and then he just the last 6 months you're like, is he still playing? Like that's how I was last season, and apparently that's how it's gonna be again this season. I start out hot and then I just fade so hard down the stretch.
Greg, you went with Hideki Matsuyama, which got you $91,956. You're getting closer to chasing down Mark. So here are the current standings: Kyle 1.3, Rick 1.3, Mark 1.0, Greg 925,000, producer Jacob 429,000.
Well, there's a long way to go. I mean, we're all right there.
43 events to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's a super season, so we're pacing ourselves. And one thing, I still feel pretty good. I feel like I got a lot of weapons. I got a lot in my pocket, which you should at this point. But I'm happy. Hideki, I was hoping to get a little more out of. Not a great Sunday, but, you know, we're all right there. It's a great race so far. I think everybody's still in the mix.
Can I pick Xander again next week? Because I want to.
Super season should be two and done. Well,
that's the challenge of one and done.
We did successfully lobby producer Jacob to, like, change the rules in the last tournament last year. So, like, we might be able to just get him to switch.
On, like, Wednesday night.
Yeah. Like, Greg was like, no, I don't think we should change. We're like, no, we're actually all changing. You've been voted off.
We all remember how that turned out.
Yeah, you ended up with it anyway. All right, gentlemen. I think that'll do it. We've got a big cat week next week for the Zozo. So obviously we'll be right back at it. DFS preview on Monday. I assume we're doing storylines on Tuesdays and round by round recaps after each and every round. That's Kyle Porter. I want to thank him for joining me. You can find him on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. That's Greg Ducharme. Thanks, Greg. You can find him at The Real GFD. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.